I don't know if you know the Devil's Advocates, but they are kind of a big deal.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a Throwback Thursday edition. Dom, a fine guest, joining us right now live via phone. He's a good friend of ours. He's John Nichols from The Nation. John, was this playing on the 8-track in your first car once upon a time?
Of course. Absolutely. Although, in fairness, I think I had to grow into this. The truth is that we were very heavy on Black Sabbath. Yeah, very heavy on Black Sabbath. Blue Oyster Cult's got a good lot of play, especially their first live album, as I recall.
And John,
we were leaving Union Grove High School at lunch break to race around the county.
And what would you drive around in and play, you know, Ozzy on the 8-track of?
Green Camaro.
A Camaro?
Not a pretty green, though. It was more of a
forest green.
Come on, man.
It wasn't that good. It was more of an industrial green.
John, I was driving around in a powder puff blue AMC Hornet, envious of your ugly green Camaro, man.
The Hornet is, I think we can both agree that there was a blessing in not having a Pacer.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
Hey, buddy, at least I am not the human personification of the Chevy Corvair. I'm going to leave that title the unsafe at any speed to U.S. Senator Ron Johnson from the great state of Wisconsin. John, you wrote something about Rojo this week. He's a bit of a menace, is he not, sir?
Oh, he's dangerous at this point. The truth of the matter is that for Wisconsinites who are kind of used to the guy, there was a point where, you know, you would like watch a YouTube video of him now and again, just to see him try and get a sentence out, right? I mean, it was amusing. And I understand that. But at this point, two things are true. One, he's become more of a political careerist, right? So he's gotten a little better at actually communicating his message. It's just that his message now is flat out conspiracy theory. It's off the wall extremism. But not an extremism that's rooted in an ideology. It's an extremism rooted in just false premises. And where it becomes dangerous, of course, is when he starts talking about vaccines and diseases and things like that, and frankly, getting it wrong.
And John, I'll be damned if I can figure out what changed in Ron Johnson, because he used to come around.
He used to like you guys.
He used to be country club cordial, bring beer, some good stuff, and some stuff that Dom would drink. And, you know, somewhere around the election time frame last year, John, he went full on Trumpster. And he had always been a little bit of a reserved Trumpster, publicly supporting the chief.
Right.
But privately saying, I hate him tweeting, I hate this, I hate that about him.
Yeah.
But now he's fully embracive. It's almost like he is the new agitator-in-chief on the Hill.
There's no doubt of that. I mean, he is, I think in fairness, it's sort of a competition between him and Rand Paul. And when you're campaigning against Rand Paul for the most out there, you are in, you know, some pretty fine company, without a doubt. But the interesting thing about Ron Johnson is that he used to, he was kind of a real low rent Paul Ryan. He was a guy who had read, at least a couple pages of Ayn Rand's, books, Fountainhead and stuff like that. And so he thought of himself as, had some ideas. They weren't his ideas. They were the ideas of a Russian immigrant who wrote, supposedly libertarian books. But, that was where he was coming from. And it didn't make him useful, but it also didn't make him usually all that harmful, right? He was kind of a goofy character who had out there ideas, obsessed with, again, Ayn Rand and stuff like that. But, when it came time to vote, he kind of just did what Mitch McConnell told him to do. And that's damaging, but it, didn't make him that different than other Republicans. Now, in the last couple of years, I mean, it's clearly he was probably more influenced by Trump than anybody else in the Senate. He has become someone who really relishes that sort of Trump-style thinking. Not communications, by the way. He still doesn't communicate like Trump. He doesn't have the flair, the theater, or anything like that. But it's the ideas. And weirdly enough, when you separate, you know, Trumpian ideas from Trump and put them into a guy who, you know, is just an okay communicator, they oddly become more frightening, you know, because it's like he's calmly suggesting, oh, well, maybe the vaccines don't work. Or he's calmly, you know, coming up with all these conspiracy theories and holding hearings on them and stuff like that. And I got to tell you, I think he's kind of, you know, he's kind of scaring some people right now.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. That's our pal John Nichols, National Affairs Correspondent with The Nation. He wrote a piece, we published it yesterday on the Facebook page, entitled Ron Johnson Needs to Come with a Warning Label. And John, I'm with you there, man. In your piece, you mentioned, and I think this happens quite a bit, looking around, you know, the nation at Republicans, they play the victim when they're criticized, and he's continuing to do that, and he did that today. We read a little bit of a piece of an op-ed he published, or at least was published, in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. John, did you have a chance to see it? Essentially, Ron Johnson thinks, you know, the mainstream media, I'm not the mainstream media, perhaps, but mainstream media is the reason why we have this divide. It's their alliances with, you know, the liberals and the Democratic Party and choosing one side over the other, and that's the problem. John, is this a continuation of the victimhood?
I don't know if it's a Pinot or a rosé, a red or a white, but it's a fine wine. There is no doubt of that. And Mitch McConnell, you know, has got to, you know, be impressed by his little protege, Ron Johnson, in this one, because the notion that Ron Johnson, who is, you know, spouting conspiracy theories, making accusations, saying really some of the wilder things to come out of the mouth of a U.S. senator in the better part of 70 years, is offended because people have compared him with Joe McCarthy. I mean, which is a part of his little essay there. The fact of the matter is his piece that he wrote for the Journal Sentinel confirms the extent that he really has become the modern Joe McCarthy. Because, of course, McCarthy would spout conspiracy theories, say things that were completely unfounded, that were false. And then when the media pointed that out, he would scream, you know, ah, the liberal media, they're out to get me. I mean, McCarthy was the pioneer of that. He was Trump before Trump. And to have Ron Johnson seriously suggest, oh, wow, I'm offended to be compared with Joe McCarthy. Come on, Ron. You are Joe McCarthy. He is the modern embodiment of McCarthy. Maybe not as sharp, not as, you know, as quick-witted, but still, he's playing the McCarthy games of saying extreme, crazy, dangerous things right before he has to decide whether to run for another term. That's the same thing Joe McCarthy did. Clearly for political reasons, trying to gin up his base, trying to get himself a little bit better positioned politically. And unlike McCarthy, who, you know, at least had a little bit of humor about it, Ron Johnson seems to be genuinely offended that anyone would call him out. You know, it's sort of like, I mean, really? If you read the whole piece, it's amazing. It's like, I'm a nice guy. I don't say things in bold or interesting ways. I'm barely worth listening to. Why are people offended by me?
You know, John, we had Ron Johnson in studio, long interview, like three segments, 45 minutes, something like that, in Milwaukee the day after he voted to acquit Donald Trump in the first impeachment vote. And, you know, early February, right after the State of the Union, timeframe. And He was proud of his vote. He certainly felt the impeachment of Trump was politically motivated. But I did ask him about history. You know, how do you think your gravestone's going to read, Senator? And I would wonder, John, and, you know, I'm not wishing harm upon Rojo, you know, maybe electoral harm, but not physical harm.
No, of course not.
But how do you think a guy like Rojo's gravestone's going to read?
Well, he's going to be around for a long time. You know, that kind of mean doesn't go away. so he's going to last. He's a rich, privileged man, you know, with a
Let me restate. How do you think history will remember the antics of Ron Johnson?
History, you mean after he's defeated in 2022? Well, that's a different thing. I think that he will, interestingly enough, be immediately cut loose by his fellow Republicans. And that's going to be the funnest part of it, right? Because they did the same thing to McCarthy. You know, when McCarthy, you know, kind of crashed and burned in the mid-50s, suddenly no Republican knew the guy. You know, it's like, Joe who? What? I mean, oh, man, he was crazy. He was bad. He went off the deep end. And so they all distanced themselves. And so what's going to happen with Ron Johnson is that, you know, all the people that he thinks are his friends are going to be nowhere to be found, right? Because he will be the example of the guy who went to such extremes, went so far off the deep end that he was unelectable. Now, the fact is the rest of the party does the same stuff, right? I mean, it's not just Ron Johnson. It is he is part and parcel of something much broader. But he says it and does it in more jarring and unsettling ways. And so as a result, history is going to remember him as a conspiracy theorist, as a guy who was kind of way out there and somehow got into the U.S. Senate. And so I'm not as concerned about how history thinks of Ron Johnson. I'm a little more concerned about Wisconsin because, you know, too many more of these kinds of senators come along, we're going to start to get a reputation as a state that isn't a very good judge of character.
John Nichols from The Nation magazine. John, I know you're going to stick around for another segment. So before we go to break, I want to throw this one out to you. The social media oligarchies that Ron Johnson's referred to in his opinion piece. Yeah. I noticed you also had some criticism of perhaps the social media companies. And I just want to get your sense on that, John. I mean, I understand what people are concerned about, but, you know, what about MySpace or Vine or Friendster or AOL? I mean, these were huge, you know, companies at one time that are really no longer there, except for perhaps a few attorneys using the AOL emails on Trump's filings. But beyond that, John, you know, the Republicans and certainly Trump in his filing and their attorneys say, well, you know, essentially Facebook is a state-owned character, a state player, and they, as such, then are you know, limited in their ability to protect their own free speech and allow his free speech. John, do you see some commonalities with your criticism of big tech and, you know, Trump and Ron Johnson's?
Somewhere in that question.
Somewhere.
I got a hint that I'm supposed to get rid of my Hotmail account. Is this what you're telling me?
No, not at all, man. You're good to go.
I'm on.
I still have one too, John. That's how my agent gets a hold of me.
I just wanted to clarify because it's good for sending big files. You know, I mean, but look, I think that whenever anything gets so big that it, you know, is sort of the dominant player and that it cannot be effectively, it can't be an effective competition, right? That it becomes the platform that everything, you know, circles around. You have to be concerned about that. And I mean, that is not a left or a right thing. That's a fundamental reality. Milton Friedman, of all people, very conservative guy, used to have critiques of bigness when it got to the level of monopoly, right? And so too, obviously, did Robert M. La Follette. And so you could go from left and right there. The counsel that I would give, though, is that maybe I'm cynical here and you can tell me if I am. But I don't think that Donald Trump or Ron Johnson are really concerned about the bigness of Facebook or places like that. I don't think that's their worry. In fact, you saw some of the, you know, very Trumpian Republicans, when they had a chance to go after some of the big guys on this, they voted against it.
John, you got to hold that thought. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocate. Sorry, buddy.
What has happened to us? What has happened to us?
I'm not a climate change denier.
The man's a menace.
Brought
bring it? Oh, it's already been brought in. Dom and Croots are the Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show, continuing our conversation with John Nichols, National Affairs Correspondent with The Nation. John, before we were so rudely interrupted by a commercial break, we were discussing the similarities and perhaps differences of criticism between right and left with regards to the giant tech media oligarchies, as Ron Johnson puts it. What are your thoughts on that, sir?
Well, you just cut me off right before I got to my penultimate point there. Basic concept is that I don't think that Ron Johnson and Donald Trump are against big. In fact, Donald Trump's whole life, his whole career was about getting big, right? You know, making more money doing that. And Ron Johnson also sort of almost a, you know, like bleary-eyed capitalist. So I don't think they're that bothered with bigness. I think what they're bothered with is that this is something they can't control. And they don't like the fact that they can't tell Facebook or somebody else what to do, that somebody like Facebook can tell them what to do. And that is not a very noble reason for, you know, wanting to break it up or wanting to do things with it. But it is still one that we have to, you know, keep in our head. We have to understand that concept, because if there is an entity that is so powerful, it can tell you whether you can communicate on that entity, and that entity is dominant, it's a monopolistic entity, then we all have to be concerned about that, right? Because at the end of the day, what's the likelihood that it's going to be always capitalists, like wealthy, powerful, connected people that get shut down, versus the likelihood that it's going to be working class, radical, political people that get shut down? I'm going to, at the end of the day, say that you know, all of these institutions they're too big, they have too much power, and there is a very good argument for figuring out ways that we can either have more competition, right, or to make these platforms public, right? But one way or the other, it's not about censoring. It's not about saying, oh, you're not nice to Donald Trump, so you can't exist. It's the opposite of that. It's about saying, we want to have the boldest, freest communication in this country. And so as a result, we want to make sure that nobody's got such dominant control over it that that they can shut down one set of thinkers versus another.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates. We got the finest of guests. You can find him at Nichols Uprising on his Getter account.
I'm not going to be able to get on that account now.
John, let me ask you quickly, though, a different perspective on this big tech lawsuit rolled out by Donald Trump.
By the way, Trump's lawsuit is a joke.
Well, I concur. I see very little merit there, and I think most of it's been litigated prior and resolved.
That's right.
But first and foremost, it's a grift. It's a money-raising scheme. But secondarily, John, don't you think this is sort of an effort to respond to the Trump org indictments? I mean, Trump's old tricks were, if somebody sues you, you counter-sue them.
You double-sue them.
You can't counter-sue the Manhattan DA, so you go after a bigger target still. You go sue Facebook, Google, Twitter, and MySpace, or whatever.
Here's the way to understand it. That's exactly right. This is not a new reality. Remember, we were talking about Joe McCarthy. Joe McCarthy always attacked the press, right? He was always mad at the press. Why? Not because he hated publicity. Joe McCarthy loved publicity, but he didn't want to be exposed, right? He didn't want the truth to come out about it. And so one of the things that has been sort of a constant, especially with a lot of Republicans, starting with Joe McCarthy, but then certainly with Richard Nixon, even more so with Ronald Reagan, and dramatically more so with Dick Cheney and now Donald Trump, is you attack the media because you don't want people to believe what they're being told, right? You don't want them to believe the facts that are coming out. And the way that you undermine the facts is to attack the media in general, to say that it is some sort of big entity that's always hating on you and that is always out to get you. And Trump has taken this to the next level. He's taken it to attacking social media platforms because he's smart. Give him his due. The fact of the matter is that social media now is a dominant form of communication. But he's really doing the same thing Joe McCarthy did when he attacked the Capitol Commons in the 1950s.
John, the press loves Trump back, at least for the ratings.
Oh, yeah.
Since Trump has left the daily front page, the news cycle, media ratings across the spectrum are way down. Conflict is good for ratings. Do you think the media does have some incentive to kind of stir the pot, John?
Look, this is a huge problem. I wrote a piece for The Nation about it back in 2016. It was clear that the media was making Trump, and even had, you know, a CBS executive say, well, Trump may be bad for America, but he's very good for CBS. And so the reality is that media has been obsessed with Trump. The thing to understand about this is that that obsession is rooted in media's laziness. And this is a really big deal. Media institutions don't want to spend the money and hire the amount of staff that is needed to really cover a broad array of stories. And so Trump is cheap, right? He's the easiest date for media. You know, you just put him on and everybody's like, what did he say? Right? And this is the thing to understand. The obsession with Donald Trump isn't about, you know, Donald Trump per se. It's just that he is such a cheap, easy, theatrical character that media defaults to him. And so there is a place here for a critique of media. And that critique of media is that it genuinely needs to figure out how to go and cover more issues, more things that are going on. And unfortunately, in these times, that means you've got to spend money. And an awful lot of our media companies are having a hard time getting money because advertising is hard to get. There's no question of that. And also that, frankly, they don't want to give up their profits to the point where, you know, like they can't live on the big house on the top of the hill. And so we have a problem in this country, and it's one that we ought to be thinking about a lot more deeply. It does have something to do with Trump. There's no question of that. But it also has something much deeper to do with how do you fund media? How do you make a functional media in the 21st century?
I don't know, John. If I ever figure it out, I'll let you know.
Yeah, I know. I think you guys have been working on that project here, haven't you?
We're like a decade in, John.
Yeah, yeah.
John Nichols.
I write books about it, by the way, and I'm still trying to figure it out. So there you go.
Well, you know, if I could write books, John, I would write books, but my OCD prevents me from writing down so many words at the same time. It'd take me the rest of my natural born life to write a pamphlet. John Nichols from The Nation. Thank God. Deadlines, right, John? Deadline pressure. That's what you need.
That's the answer. Gets you through everything. Got me through high school.
Appreciate you coming around. Cheating off the smart girl next to me got me through high school.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Come back with us. We'll look at your paper if you're the smartest kid in class. 844-967-2789. Hour 2 is next. Oh, yeah, and Mark Pocad, my congressman.
Get her.
That was your whole plan. Get her.
Here's a handsome young brother, won't you vax that thing up?
Don't ask me to get inside the mind of a liberal progressive socialist Marxist.